I'm Karen Hartglass, and you're listening to It's All About Food. I've got Gene Stone here in the studio with me, and he is the editor of a new book that came out called Forks Over Knives. And he's the author of the international bestseller, The Secrets of People Who Never Get Sick, and the co-author with Rip Esselstyn of The Engine 2 Diet. Stone, who has written or ghostwritten more than 30 books and numerous magazine articles, lives in New York and follows a plant-based diet. Thank you for joining me, Gene.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Well, you've written over more than 30 books.
I have.
How do you do that?
How do I write that many books? Well, that's a good question. I'm not sure. You know, if you ever actually saw me, I mean, I don't know how many of your listeners are writers, but writing is odd. I mean, I think if you actually saw a writer, you wouldn't really see any. It seems to me all I do is walk around, play with a cat, eat, you know, and then somehow at some point I write a little bit, and then it turns out to be a book.
Now, it says you follow a plant-based diet. Did you come on to that on your own, or was it something you were writing that you...
Well, I really believe in participatory journalism, so whatever I'm writing about, I tend to do. I've been a vegetarian since, you know, I don't know, 1932 or something.
Whoa.
Well, maybe not that long.
I don't think so.
But a long time. But when then I met Rip Esselstyn, Rip is the vegan or the plant-based firefighter from Austin, Texas, who wrote with me The Engine 2 Diet. His father's Caldwell Esselstyn, who is the author of Prevent and Reverse Heart Disease, which is the book that so influenced President Clinton and helped him become a vegan. So when I met Rip, and I was just a vegetarian, he goes, wow, because Rip's like the most excitable, happy guy I've ever met, probably because he eats nothing but plants.
Mm-hmm.
So he goes, wow, this is so cool. And I go, yeah. He goes, so what do you eat? And I said, well, you know, I still have dairy. And he goes, oh, man, no. And so I said, well, maybe to write this book, I should go all plant-based. And he said, yeah, do that. So I went all plant-based. And then, like many people, my cholesterol level went from, I don't know, like 240 to 180. My HDL went up. My LDL went down. My triglycerides went down. And all of a sudden, my doctor's going, did you start taking statins without telling me? And I'm going, no. I just actually started eating plants. And he goes, no, seriously. And I go, no, I mean, seriously. I started eating plants. He goes, no, come on. Seriously.
Oh, please.
And he wouldn't believe me. So he actually, when I was in his office last time, so I'd go in for, you know, checkup. He said, well, let's just do another lipid test now. So he did, and then it came back, and I was 70. And I come from a family where 400 is normal.
Right.
And he goes, I don't understand this. You know, you tried to tell me this is coming from, what do you call it, plants? And look, my doctor's a great guy, and I really love him. I'm not knocking doctors. But as you know, it can be a surprise to Western doctors sometimes that plants and diet can have such an important effect on your health.
Well, what's surprising me is that your doctor was so surprised today, or I don't know how many, it was just a few years ago, I imagine.
No, this was just fairly recently, and the issue is that, as you know, most doctors aren't trained in nutrition. They're trained in everything but, and my doctor, who is, as I say, I love my doctor. He is a great, sympathetic, wonderful guy, but he hasn't really been trained that way, and he works, you know, at NYU, and it's very allopathic and Western and
right.
All about...
Has he read your books now?
I give him my books. I can't swear that he's read them. I suppose I could test them next time.
What's
on page 84?
Well, there are more doctors that are more knowledgeable today about nutrition, and I went to a cardiologist maybe about a year ago. He was younger, so maybe that's why he was familiar with it, but still, he had a list of things you do to prevent heart disease, and although eating fruits and vegetables was at the top of the list, he just kind of like threw it off and then jumped right to statins.
Right. Well, as you know also, there's not a lot of money in plants and vegetables.
Oh, really?
And it's not that doctors are necessarily corrupt, because I think most of them are terrific, and they go into medicine because they care about health and they care about helping people. But the system is not necessarily geared toward prevention. It's not geared toward broccoli. It's not geared toward Swiss chard. You know, we have this enormous pharmacological industry that is trying to get all of us to take drugs. And again, some of those drugs have saved lives.
Absolutely.
You know, there's no question that some of these drugs, we wouldn't have a society functioning if it weren't for some of these drugs. It's just that, do we all need to be on all drugs all the time? I don't know.
Well, I think also, you know, I'm sure there are things that we need from the pharmaceutical industry there are all kinds of mysteries that affect our health that boggle the mind. But if everyone was eating a healthy plant-based diet, I think it would be amazing where the medical industry and the pharmaceutical industry would be today. I mean, we would be curing the real mysteries and solving really serious problems that we don't even look at today.
And I think that's what a lot of Forks Over Knives, which is the documentary that I wrote the accompanying book to, that's basically what it's trying to say to people, is that health is obviously extremely important, but have you looked at health from this particular perspective yet? And while in the world you and I occupy, of course we have. As you probably know, 98% of the country probably still doesn't think of the fact that their dinner was filled with hamburger, cheese, meat, animal protein, and they don't feel good afterwards. Like, oh, there's a connection. That's really interesting. And what Forks Over Knives does, I think, in the movie, very graphically, and I think, well, very well, is show some of these connections. Which is why I think we're all trying to buy 10 copies of Forks Over Knives and give them to each other and give them to other people. Have you seen the documentary?
I have.
Oh, good.
Okay.
Did you like it?
I did. I love Dr. Campbell and Dr. Esselstyn, and just to see them telling their story and having people watch it.
Dr. Esselstyn, the wonderful thing is that he started this back in 1985. And so that's, 26 years ago?
Mm-hmm.
And when he started it, people kind of laughed at him. They thought, well, this is wacky. And he kept doing it and kept doing it. And he even published his book, Prevent and Reverse Heart Disease,
right,
back maybe 5 or 6 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't really go anywhere. And in the last 2 years or so, all of a sudden, boom.
What do you think it is? Is it just this, critical mass or something like that?
That's a great question. I don't know the answer. I do think that a lot of it has to do with the fact that it's real. In other words, if this were just some silly fad, it would have passed away. But it hasn't, because it is real.
Mm-hmm.
I also think that part of it, frankly, is the economy and the fact that people can't afford to have the kind of health care that the economy wants them to have. People can't pay out the way they could pay out before. Insurance is so expensive. Employers are worried about their health, and they're worried about their employees' health. So all of a sudden, I think people are looking around, is there a way that I can actually stay healthy and spend less money that I've been spending, and not the way it normally works, which is I spend more money, I go to the hospital, I have copays.
No, it's nuts. It's clearly really nuts. And so your book has been on the New York Times bestseller list.
It's number one this weekend.
Now, that's hot.
It's really cool.
Now, who's buying the book?
Well, it looks like everybody. Actually, we don't track the sales per se. We have no idea. All we know is that the Times list is composed of lots of different bookstores across the country, and the fact that it's number one means that in all these different bookstores, people are actually lining up to buy the book. And that is, I have to say, a surprise. The first printing was, maybe about 20,000 copies, and maybe 2 months later, we now have over, I think it's like 85 or 90,000 in print.
Wow.
And it just keeps it going up, not down. So
right.
This is good.
Well, this book is kind of like a nice, simple introduction, hits all the points.
Exactly.
And, it might whet your appetite to want to learn more about one particular issue, but it's really good. And then you have all these different contributors with their recipes. And the one obvious missing ingredient, other than animal products, is oil.
Oil. Yes, there's the oil question. It's funny, in the plant-based world, that some of the plant-based people don't even like the word vegan. The vegan people go, why don't you like the word plant-based?
Yeah.
Then there's the oil and the non-oil people. I'm a big tent kind of guy. I'm just happy to see anybody not eating animals.
Right, me too.
I'm very much animal rights and very much thinking that the less animal protein you eat, the better. But I feel very comfortable. If I can get someone just to switch from eating meat every night to eating it just once a week, I feel terrific.
That's right.
But there are other people who are a little more pure. The people who are involved with Forks Over Knives are plant-based people who also are people who don't feel that oil is a healthy thing, not heart healthy. In fact, they feel it's heart unhealthy. Their point is that it is a processed food. Olives are great, avocados are great, but then to throw away all that's good about the olive or the avocado and press it down and make oil out of it, that's not so great.
Right. And a lot of people are really surprised to hear that.
Yeah, because...
Well, there's the Mediterranean diet, and olive oil is so healthy.
And then there's also an olive oil industry that spends a lot of money in promoting this. It is actually... Of all the things that come up in talking about forks over knives, that is actually probably the one thing that people are most surprised by.
Mm-hmm.
When you say, I'm a plant-based guy, and people go, yeah, I've heard of that. Or you say, I don't have any animal protein, then they always want to know about, wasn't yogurt healthy? And then you go into the dairy thing. But then once you get to oil, I find that for a lot of people, that's just like, they don't go any further.
Yeah.
And so I say, look, fine. You know, if you want to have a plant-based diet and you want to include oil, try it. You know. Maybe it would be fun, however, to spend, let's just say, 2 to 3 weeks and take oil out of your diet and see what happens. What I've been doing with some of my friends who who have cholesterol at home testing kits,
yes,
is try it. Is, you know, spend 2 weeks without oil and see what happens. And most of these people, not all of them, because it's funny how you never know. People have odd metabolisms and systems, but I would say for the majority... Things are good.
I'm one of those people with odd metabolisms. me and cholesterol, it's been a strange history.
Is your cholesterol normally high?
Yeah, I haven't had it tested recently, but it can be around 200 or 240 sometimes, and then other times it's 150. So it
I'm a little bit like you. Mine jumps around a lot. But, you know, there's been a whole spate of studies that have showed that it may actually not be your cholesterol level. It's the size of your cholesterol molecule. And people that have large cholesterol molecules can also have high cholesterol levels and be okay because that cholesterol molecule is so big it doesn't lodge anywhere in your system.
Right.
But if you have little tiny cholesterol molecules and have to stick it in anywhere, then you're really stuck.
Yeah, I had heard something about that, and I'm going for it.
Yeah, me too, but I like it.
I like that theory. But yeah, I have, I don't want to go into my history. It's not about me. But it's good to know. I mean, it just shows that there are so many things that we don't know.
Yeah.
But the thing that we do know, you know, cholesterol is an indication of a risk. And that's it.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't mean anything. There are people with low cholesterol that have had heart attacks. There are people
Absolutely.
That have low cholesterol that have their arteries are coated with gunk.
Mm-hmm. My parents, both of them had cholesterol levels around 350 to 400. And neither of them ever had any heart problems. Now, that's unusual. I'm not saying that's what you want. But as you're right in that you can't say that every single person's system is exactly like everybody else's. There's no question that, for the most part, if you have a low cholesterol, you're probably going to be heart disease-free, and that's part of what Colin talks about in the China study. It's part of what Dr. Esselstyn talks about in his books and in his practice. In fact, he's never seen anybody with a cholesterol level of under 150 have heart disease.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't mean, however, because this is what happened to me. The first time, I remember for years, people didn't really talk about cholesterol. I remember the first time I got tested, and the nurse, who meant well, but she comes out of the... office, she goes, oh my God, your cholesterol level is 350. You're going to die. Thanks.
What about, can you have too low cholesterol? I've heard people say their doctors have told them their cholesterol is too low.
Yeah, I've heard people say their doctors have said that, but I have actually never run into, I've never read anything that says there's such a thing as cholesterol level too low.
Yeah, I haven't either.
So I don't think it's true. I think sometimes doctors just say, things.
I remember reading in Dr. Campbell's China study that in China, the range, when he was studying it, was around 90 to 150.
Yeah.
Their high was 150.
Right.
I know that's changed because China is changing and they want to be just like us.
Mm-hmm.
And
they want to
so
eat like us. They want to have burgers. They want to have cheese.
They've got diabetes problems more than ever now, and it's really, really sad. Yeah. Is Forks Over Knives going international?
Yes, absolutely. Brian Wendell, who is the producer and the guy who really, his heart has been in this from the beginning, and he's the one who really made all of this happen. After Brian, every country in the world would have a screening of Forks Over Knives, and I don't care what language that is. He would like to be happy to translate it into, what are there, like 4,000 languages?
I don't know. Sure, all I know is I have a $5 vegan guide to the International Vegan Passport, where it has 36 languages in it on what vegans eat.
Have you ever have you gone overseas and tried to eat plant-based?
I've lived in France as a vegan for 4 years.
But don't they look down on, because that's a cheese.
Oh, I know. I traveled all over the world, and I personally haven't had a problem. But, you know, I think it's all in I'm pointing to my head. I think
yes,
it's
you
all
are.
In the mind. But in France, It was really funny. I lived in the south of France where they love fresh vegetables.
Right.
It's true they saute everything in olive oil.
They certainly do.
Unless you ask for légumes au vapeur, which is steamed. The only time I had a problem was in Lyon, in one of the most famous restaurants in Lyon. I gave them 2 weeks' notice, and they said it would be no problem, and I gave them 2 days' notice, and they said it would be no problem, and I walked in, and it was a disaster. But most chefs were challenged, and that was 15 years ago, and I think they've gotten a lot better since then.
I'm going to Paris, actually, in November, and I'm thinking, am I going to have to pack a lot of power bars with me?
No, because even though they do eat a lot of meat and cheese, they do eat a lot of fresh vegetables, and you can get fabulous salads anywhere.
Yeah.
And there's also a lot of Lebanese restaurants in Paris.
Yeah.
Does have olive oil
it
in a lot of them.
Well, I actually am not one of the... I decided, because again, I really encourage everybody to figure out what works best for them.
Right.
For me, I'm pretty much all plant-based, but I have had an egg or two in the last year because I was in the middle of America traveling and starving, and I just served eggs, and I was so hungry, I thought, well, darn, I'm going to have to do this or else I'm going to be really unhappy. I would say I'm 99%. So what Rip says, Rip Esselstyn, he has a theory that... he is plant perfect because that's just what he can get away with. But very few people can be plant perfect. If you can be plant strong, that's pretty good. And plant strong means you're doing 95.
Right. Absolutely.
You know, but again, if you can just be plant experimental when you start, the idea isn't to make people feel guilty or, you know, let's say you really want to become a vegan and you work hard at it, then you have a hamburger and you feel so guilty that you never, like, be vegan again because it's really nice to be forgiving. And if I have a friend who's struggling with a plant-based diet and admits to me that he had a piece of meat...
And something that I always say, no matter what you eat, when you eat it, enjoy it, and don't eat guilt while you're eating, because that's going to do more damage than anything else.
Yeah, exactly. So as far as oil goes, I certainly cut oil out of my diet from what I used to have, because I haven't realized how much oil... I don't think most people realize
the amount
of oil you put into your system, whether it's just salad dressing or something sautéed, or, you know, you look at, I love artichoke hearts, so I never sort of thought about the fact that they're packed in pure olive oil.
Oh, gosh,
or olives, and so they're packed in olive oil, so I wasn't just having the olive. And I realized I was having a lot of olive oil, so what I've done is I've cut back. I probably have a tenth of what I used to have, but... You know, a little olive oil gets into my system.
It's okay. I'm going to tell you, you're okay.
I feel okay.
I think for people that have extreme heart disease and their doctors have given them a death sentence, definitely avoiding all oils and following Dr. Esselstyn's recipes is the way to go. But for most of us, definitely eliminating the animal foods, reducing animal foods and dairy is a good thing. And then, you know, after that, you can pick your own.
And the other issue for me is I came into this through Rip and his father and through health. I sort of switched over to the animal rights kind of thing. Because
it happens to the best of us.
You start seeing these films and you start talking to people and all of a sudden you realize, oh, what are we doing? So I've gotten to know Gene Bauer, who runs Farm Sanctuary. He's terrific. He's one of the people featured in Forks Over Knives.
Yep.
And also this amazing 27-year-old guy named Nathan Runkle.
Yeah, he's amazing.
Mercy for Animals. I mean, dude is like, you know, 27, and for 10 years
he's
been running one of the most effective animal rights groups in the country.
Yeah, amazing. Well, we need more of those people.
Absolutely.
Okay, so you wrote a book called The Secrets of People Who Never Get Sick.
I did. That's the book, actually. Most of what I write is ghostwritten for other people. That's a book I wrote under my own name. I've written probably about 8 or 9 ghost books for doctors and health professionals. And obviously, after all these years, I don't think I know that much, but I think I knew enough to write a book about what I've learned.
Okay, did you write this once you were on a plant diet?
Yes.
Okay.
I do have chicken soup in there, though, which makes a lot of my plant-based friends unhappy. But the question there is simply that, does chicken soup work? And the issue that I pose is that it actually does seem to have some effectiveness, but not because of the chicken. It's the soup.
Oh.
It's the hot liquid combined with all the vegetables and the spices. That's probably what makes
it
work.
It's not histamine
but people
or
don't,
something.
It's not something
I've
heard in
about.
The chicken.
Yeah. Okay,
so
that's
the fact of the matter is that when you're talking about chicken soup, if you can get them to have the chicken soup without the chicken, they're probably going to do just as well.
That's not what they said on the Dr. Oz show.
Well, I'm not responsible for what they say on the Dr. Oz show.
Okay, so what are the most surprising secrets in here?
And secrets of people who never get sick. I probably went through maybe 60 secrets before I picked out the ones that made the most sense, which were about 25 of them. The one that I thought was most surprising because it had a real intense scientific base with cold showers.
Huh.
Cold showers are really good for you. They're terrific for your metabolism. They increase the body's level of glutathione, which you can buy in a health food store for like $40, or you can just take a cold shower.
Now, that I have never heard.
It's a great thing. However, as I said in the beginning, I am a participatory journalist. I did every one of these things, of course, except for the chicken soup. Cold showers is pretty much where I failed.
Yeah, I've
they're
never
really
liked
cold.
Them. Never you know? Liked them. And there was that guy a few months ago in the news who was into losing weight by sitting in a bath of ice cubes. Did you hear about
have
that?
I know I missed that one.
Yeah,
I guess you can find somebody who advocates everything, but you really want to find somebody who advocates everything with some kind of scientific basis. What Secrets of People is all about is I found the people with the secrets, all of them had to be very healthy, but then I did a lot of research trying to figure out if these secrets are valid or not. Mm-hmm. There's nothing in that book that doesn't have at least some
The one that's popping out to me is eating dirt.
Eating dirt, absolutely. But I don't mean people should just go out and munch on some mud. What we're really talking about there is the immune system, and that if you don't expose your immune system to friendly microorganisms, or even some unfriendly ones, it's like living in a bubble. Your immune system has nothing to do, and then you get your immune system, which is like a locked and loaded army, ready to move, and it has nothing to do, and then it fires back in on itself, and that's when you get autoimmune diseases.
Right.
And there's a lot of research that shows that children who grow up not exposed to going outdoors, not exposed to pets, not exposed to playing in the sandbox, are much more likely to develop asthma and other autoimmune diseases as they grow older. So the issue is, don't force dirt down your kids' throat, but let people go outside, play in the dirt, get exposed to as much as possible, and let your immune system build up immunity so that it has something to do and doesn't turn back on you.
Right. Dirt is good.
Dirt is good.
Okay. Now, I want to just say, there's a few other things in here that are popping out at me, but certainly these are all good things, but nobody gets out of this world alive, right?
Well, we don't know that for sure, but it's a best guess.
So, probably, you probably have a much greater chance of reducing risks of all of the nasty diseases that are plaguing us today if you follow most of these things, which is great. So what's a blue zone?
Blue zones were discovered by a guy named Dan Buettner for National Geographic, and there are places in the world, I think there are five or maybe now six places that have been discovered where people, for reasons that we don't fully understand, live longer, healthier, and better lives than anywhere else. There's one in Japan, there's one in Italy, there's one in Greece, there's actually one in America, and there's one in Costa Rica. And so blue zones are nature's gift, geography's gift to health.
It has nothing to do with their diet or lifestyle.
Well, interestingly, if you actually look at the things they do in blue zones, they're very similar to the secrets of people who never get sick, which I was very happy to find out.
So they like mountainous regions, so they get to walk a lot. And
They tend to be people who have a lot of manual work, perhaps. They work at farms or they're outdoors. They eat very healthy and local diets. They sleep very well. They probably take cold showers because there's no hot water.
I'm going to try that.
As I said, I failed with the cold shower per se, but what I do now is I take my normal shower and then I let it get colder and colder and colder as a minute until it gets so cold I leave it. Mm-hmm. But that gives me at least some of the benefit of the cold water.
Right. I used to like to swim a lot in pools that weren't particularly hot, but cold showers, I don't know about that. Okay, so we just have a few minutes left. Here's one of your questions that I want to ask you. If people don't adopt a plant-based diet on a large scale, what will the world look like?
Well, going back to that Big Ten theory of plant-based people, A lot of people come into it through health. A lot of people come into it through the ethical treatment of animals. But there's another group of people that come into it from the environment, mm-hmm. because there have been more and more studies that show that sustainable meat eating doesn't exist if we continue to eat the kind of animal protein that we're doing.
Oh, I like that. Say that again. Sustainable meat
doesn't exist. I never listened to myself. I don't really know what I just said, but I'm
that
glad
was good.
It's on record. But certainly plants are the future for our environment, and there have been a huge number of studies in the last few years that have shown that if we could get more people to switch over to a plant-based diet, all of these issues, well, not all of the issues of the environment, but a lot of them will be solved. And so what I'm discovering as somebody who came into it, as I said, through health, that the people I talk to who are young, they're not really, I mean, they're 18, they're invincible, mm-hmm. they don't even think about health, they're perfect. And obviously some of them are interested in animals, but the environment is becoming very key to getting people to understand that this is a beneficial way to eat for your health and the health of the planet.
Right. The environment. It's just incredible to me. We have an answer here that will solve most of the world's problems with no investment, really.
Mm-hmm.
And it just doesn't, it's not getting enough press. But
that's
Forks
why
Over
here.
Knives is on the New York Times bestseller list.
Yep. And oddly, over the last few years, there have obviously been the paleo diet and all these other things that are antithetical mm-hmm. to everything that I personally believe in. But it's been very gratifying to see all the recent books that have been very plant-based, whether it's
right.
Skinny Bitch or Alicia Silverstone's book. There have been a lot of books that show that there are a lot of people out there who are listening and beginning to act.
Right. This is great. Well, Gene, thank you.
Oh, thank you.
It's such a pleasure to meet you. I'm so glad I have this book, The Secrets of People Who Never Get
Sick. Try some of them.
Great. And a lot of luck to you. Thank you for joining me. Do you have any websites to tell me about?
Oh, yeah, secretsofpeople.com.
Secretsofpeople.com.
And Forks Over Knives at the website.
There we go, Forks Over Knives. Well, I can't wait to see Fourchette sur... what's knives?
No.
Couteau. Fourchette sur couteau. That's
oui.
French
C'est ça.
For Forks Over Knives. Thank you for joining
Au
me. Au revoir. I'm Karen Hartglass, and you've been listening to It's All About Food. Thank you for joining me. And next week, gosh, we have Tracy McGirder, who wrote Greens by Any Means, and Marissa Wolfson-Miller, who has a new documentary, Vegucated. Thanks for listening. Have a delicious week.